Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. This week, we'll be talking with author and activist Donald Jeffries. We'll be talking about his latest book called Hidden History, an expose of modern crimes, conspiracies, and cover-ups in American politics. And we'll be talking about the recent trial, show trial, and verdict of the so-called alleged Boston Marathon bomber. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Donald Jeffries. Donald Jeffries, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thanks for having me, Cindy.
For my listeners who aren't familiar with you and your work, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I've been researching the JFK assassination in particular since the mid-1970s when I was a teenage volunteer for Mark Lane's Citizens Committee of Inquiry. I've been very active on the forums for a long time. I had a novel published in 2007 called The Unreals, a science fiction novel that has a lot of conspiracy stuff in it, and it's just had a second edition that came out in 2015. And this book, Hidden History, is really just kind of a culmination of a decade's worth of, you know, questioning current events, questioning government actions, and it just kind of all came together, and I just threw everything in there and tried to document the last 50 years of what I consider to be a downward spiral on the part of America.
Well, you do have, we are going to talk about your newest book called Hidden History, an expose of modern crimes, conspiracies, and cover-ups in American politics. We'll talk about that a little later, but one of the reasons I reached out to you is that you recently wrote an article about the verdict and sentencing of the surviving Tsarnaev brother, the alleged Boston bomber. Now, people say, oh, but he was convicted, so he's not alleged anymore. From what I read about the trial and the lead up to the trial, the actual event itself, it just is so, there's just more questions than there are answers. And the trial was actually just a show trial, as you say in your article. And I have read all the analysis of Dave McGowan, which is actually very compelling and very fascinating reading about the actual event where he analyzes all the photos and things like that. I've been very resistant and hesitant to actually talk about it, though, because of one of the main actors in this entire situation is a very good friend of mine. And I haven't talked to him about it because I don't know how to approach him about it. And that's Carlos Arredondo. And yes, Everything is just so strange, so questionable. So talk about that for a little bit and talk about your take on the trial and everything that I've read even before the sentencing and the conviction never said alleged bomber. They always called him the Boston bomber before he was even convicted in, you know, what was a show trial anyway.
Right. Well, that's kind of standard operating procedure for the mainstream media. They don't bother with the things like innocent until proven guilty, unless it's a very wealthy person or a celebrity that's involved. Then they remember the innocent until proven guilty thing, but they certainly didn't in this case. Yeah, I concentrated mostly on the crazy aspects of the official narrative, according to the media and the government, about the Tsarnaev brothers being guilty. I would prefer that readers interested in the the whole photographic analysis and everything, to go to Dave McGowan's, because he does a better job, a great job. And you really do go down the rabbit hole when you go that way. But I think even without that, just looking at the fact that he received the kind of representation that these patsies always receive. And going back to Bruno Richard Hauptmann in the 1930s when he had Death House Riley representing him, you know, and in any of these cases, the official story is so full of holes that if you had like a dream team like OJ had, they would just tear it to shreds. But
right.
The system always seems to make sure that a Judy Clark appears on the scene in this case to not give the kind of representation. When you have your so-called ferocious lawyer declaring that you did it before
right.
your defense begins and calls all the four witnesses, what kind of a defense is that?
And from what I understand, she didn't cross-examine any of the prosecution witnesses.
Yeah, I don't know. She was certainly no Perry Mason. I don't know what. And she failed if her only goal was to save him from the death penalty, because he ended up being sentenced to death anyhow. So that's, and you have to wonder, in Sarnoff's case, just as in Timothy McVeigh's case, are they drugging these guys or what? I mean, how are they sitting there emotionless and not wanting to testify? Sarnoff originally pleaded not guilty, and certainly
right.
he had to know that he didn't do it. I mean, unless they're just withholding all the great evidence, but the evidence they presented of his guilt is a joke. I mean, it couldn't have happened that way, but that's the way it works in America. That's why a lot of people don't trust the legal system at all.
Well, also, I mean, when you get into speculation, I think that's when people start saying that conspiracies are, and conspiracy theorists are crazy. But, you know, Sarnoff is a young man. His brother was summarily executed. The friend was killed in FBI custody. So probably also very scared young man.
Sure, and it's the case called it, like all these cases do. This is a perfect example of the mainstream media's failure. And as I document in the book, that's what they've been doing for 50 years. I mean, starting with the JFK assassination, that's what made Watergate so suspect in my eyes. That's really the only time that you had a Woodward and Bernstein, that you had a Dan Rather aggressively, you know, attacking a president at a press conference, that kind of thing. Usually they lay down, they just accept any, no matter how preposterous the explanation is and how many times the narrative changes on these events, they just accept it. And in this case, they didn't ask any of the questions. And the only reason we know about the holes in the case against the Sarnoff brothers is because of the citizen activists on the internet, people that are, you know, living in their parents' basement and putting on these videos and asking the kind of questions that professional journalists won't.
So, of course, I think that the corporate media isn't, you know, I think they're a partner in all of this, and they have meetings to decide how they're going to present stories and things like that. I had a very clear example of this when I was on MSNBC one time. I was supposed to be on Hardball with Chris Matthews, and so he had a guest host named oh man, I forget her. I'm blanking on her name right now, but she introduced me as a woman who met with communist dictator Hugo Chavez, and so we went to a fake break, and because it was being taped, and yeah. I said, "Well, come on, you know, Chavez is not a dictator. He's been democratically elected, survived recall attempts and a coup attempt." And, you know, he is actually trying to, you know, do socialist reforms in Venezuela, but he's not a communist. And she goes, oh, we know that, but we had a meeting, and we decided to call him a communist dictator anyway. So they do have these meetings that they decide how to present stories. And, well, I don't watch corporate media anymore. I just got so fed up with it. But to me, it was more like what they didn't cover was more telling sometimes than what they did cover.
Right. It's the questions they don't ask. And the questions are crying out for answers. But, you know, as a writer noted a long time ago, if they don't even ask the questions, then I don't have to worry about answers. And that's the the problem we face today. And in this case, it was inevitable. As I wrote in the article, in all these cases, if these guys go to trial, if they survive, a lot of times they're killed at the scene or they kill themselves, but if they survive, you know what's going to happen. The guilty verdict is inevitable, and the media drums up the beat that it's inevitable, the case against them is overwhelming. They always get an attorney like Sarnoff got I guess they must not have any power themselves. I guess he didn't have the money or the wherewithal to hire a dream team himself, and you'd think that an activist lawyer would want to get in there and defend him and make a name for himself. But this goes back to Lee Harvey Oswald when he was supposedly asking for John Apt, who was one of the most well-known so-called communist lawyer at the time, and the guy just afterwards he just begged off and said, "I have a full caseload." And this was an accused assassin of the president of the United States, and who was being said to be a communist. You'd think an alleged communist sympathizer lawyer would want to jump right on that, but that's what happens in these cases all the time. People say the lawyers stay away from it like the plague, and a tried and true Judy Clark type jumps in there and puts on a defense that really a first year law student would laugh at.
And I don't know if I read it in your article or another article, but really 8 out of 10 people in Massachusetts did not want him to get the death penalty.
Yeah, you think of all states, that would be, they've subverted the will of the people so often. That
right.
It didn't surprise me that he, because they tend to want to get rid. I mean, McVeigh was executed pretty quickly, wasn't interviewed by anybody on TV, and that's what happens. They want to get these guys out of the way if they survive, it seems.
Well, my friend Gore Vidal did a lot of work around Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your book now, Hidden History. Before we go on, tell my listeners the title of your article, where they can find it, and of course I'll link it on the newsletter for this show.
Oh, well, it's at my blog, Keeping It Unreal, which is, takeoff on the unreal is my novel.
Uh-huh.
I believe it's donaldjeffries.wordpress.com, but if you have the link there, you can link on it. It's the latest thing I wrote. I titled it Another Show Trial for Another Patsy.
Right. And Oswald did say he was a patsy, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
From what I remember about this.
He did.
I haven't gone too deeply. I read a lot about the JFK assassination. Quite a while back. But so your new book is called Hidden History, an expose of modern crimes, conspiracies, and cover-ups in American politics, as we said before. And we'll also link your book on the newsletter. What do you think about the Bin Laden, so-called Bin Laden assassination by Obama? A couple of years, what he said happened a couple of years ago.
Oh boy, there's so many. I mean, any way you look at that, it's so wrong. If you somehow accept the premise that they assassinated him the way they said they did, which I think there are lots of reasons to question that, but if you did, that's almost sadder than it's not, because as I point out in my book, in 1976, Gerald Ford was pressured by Congress. They just had the first hearings on the CIA abuses and the fact that they attempted to assassinate Castro. He was pressured to sign an executive order, Ford of all people, a member of the Warren Commission, that banned assassination as an American foreign policy weapon. Basically, we were, at that time, as a people, recognized that most polls showed that most people would have been against assassinating Hitler. So we recognized that assassination was going beyond the pale at that time. Now you flash forward 40 years into the future, less than 40 years in the future, and you have a so-called liberal president, Barack Obama, who is not only acknowledging an assassination, but is bragging about it.
Right.
Hillary Clinton, all the Democrats bragging about it. I just heard on the radio the other day where they were talking about the NSA, and the NSA's official thing is they were talking about killing people, matter-of-factly, when we kill people. To say that's Orwelling, it is mind-boggling, But there's certainly a lot of cases, a lot of reasons to doubt that. I don't believe for a second they dumped his body in the sea. It's definitely not a Muslim custom. And the first picture they put out of the his so-called dead body online, the kids on the internet dissected that within an hour and they had to take it down. And I don't know when he died, but I don't think that assassin. And then you remember the. the photo that appeared in the White Situation Room with Hillary Clinton with her hand over her mouth. And they had to acknowledge that there was no video, so what were they watching? So it was a staged thing, and that's why you have these rabbit holes that go so deep, because of things like that, because it's hard to picture an innocent explanation where the leaders of our country are posing for a fake photo in reaction to something.
Well, I from the beginning, I didn't believe a word of it. I haven't yet to see one iota of hard proof that Osama bin Laden was assassinated that day. And then Seymour Hersh recently wrote an article for the London Review of Books. I don't even believe his retelling of the story. I think it's just to muddy the waters even more. Or the unnamed source that Seymour always likes to use, the unnamed source, was feeding him just a line of BS. If it's true, a lot of people are speculating that, you know, it's just fiction. However, what it did do was mainstream, really, the fact that it could be a lie, what happened.
Sure. I mean, I don't, at this point, you know, people ask me all the time, well, you don't believe anything. And I really don't.
I don't either.
We've all known probably a big liar in our lives, an individual, maybe a habitual liar, if not a pathologic liar. Well, the government is like that kind of individual. They've been caught in so many lies, and the mainstream media, it's the same way. Why would you trust these people? We know the things they lie about and how they misrepresent things. So there's reason to be skeptical about anything they tell you. If it's coming from them, well, I tend not to believe it.
Oh, absolutely. I especially, people on the so-called left, they believe to the core of their being that George Bush and Dick Cheney and the rest lied about the reasons to invade Iraq, but they believe to the core of their being that they told the absolute truth about 9/11.
Right, exactly.
I don't know what happened on 9/11. All I know is this government lied about it because, like you just said, they're pathological known liars.
Yeah, I have a long section on 9/11 in the book, and I tried to present an overview with all the strongest evidence that clearly the official story is impossible. And yeah, it's we look what came out of 9/11. I mean, the Patriot Act came out of it. Eventually the NDAA and this authoritarian rule that, like you said, the left seems even just as enamored of this authoritarianism as the right does. But on the left, they just want to watch what you say. They're such gatekeepers of speech. They're so anxious to get people fired, and they're so devoted to political correctness, but they don't care about civil liberties anymore. And the right is just so devoted to, going after the legacy of Ayn Rand and this politics of greed and selfishness, that we have no choice if you go between the establishment left and the establishment right. That's no choice at all. And so you have to think independently. But yeah, certainly other than Dennis Kucinich, I think was very good, and Cynthia McKinney is great, there really aren't any people on the left. Elizabeth Warren talks a good game sometimes, but she voted not to audit the Federal Reserve. I mean, that's a no-brainer. So while she's ranting against the big banks, well, you're not going to audit the Fed. Your remarks about the banks are pretty toothless.
Oh, absolutely. And so, in Hidden History, did you ever read I.F. Stone's book called Hidden History about the Korean War and all the lies and conspiracies that led up to that?
No, I didn't. I.F. Stone, because of my long experience with the JFK assassination, I tend to view people. I.F. Stone doesn't have a great track record with the JFK assassination. Uh-huh. He smeared the like a lot of the left. Yeah, he wrote tons and tons of pieces about smearing the critics like Mark Lane and Harold Weisberg, the original critics, Sylvia Moore. And I tended to turn off to him and people like that. That's why I feel the way I do about Noam Chomsky. Some of the stuff sounds great, but he not only doesn't want to listen to any so-called conspiracy theories, he actually denigrates the memory of JFK, and I go into a lot of that in Hidden History, where I think JFK has been smeared unfairly, and he's like a beacon of virtue compared to the other modern presidents, and he's really gotten a raw deal, I think, historically.
I wouldn't go that far because he is an American president, or was. Yeah. But, you know, to me, it's probably somewhere in between. But I.F. Stone wrote this book in 1952, and mm-hmm. he was absolutely ostracized by the mainstream for even questioning the fact that we shouldn't have gone into Korea. But you call the JFK assassination the mother of all conspiracies, and of course there were many before JFK. I mean, what about, you know, Pearl Harbor that yeah. led to millions, sure. millions, tens of millions of deaths? So why do you call JFK the mother of all, the assassination, the mother of all conspiracies?
Well, I had to begin somewhere, and I think like you, I'm a baby boomer. I was born in 56, so I was 7 years old when he was killed. And I think that that was a seminal event of our mm-hmm. generation. And I think you can, certainly, you talk about Pearl Harbor, you can go back to the Civil War, even the beginning of the country if you want, but there have been conspiracies and corruption all the time. But
right.
it really picked up, I believe, because this was the assassination of a president. It was in the modern era where you had television coverage. The first, you know, when Oswald was shot on television, it was the first live murder, I believe, ever captured on film. So this had a tremendous psychological impact on, especially on kids like myself, and I'm sure older people that were teenagers, you know, that were looking to join the Peace Corps and were inspired by JFK's idealism. So the fact that it was, and then when you had the suspect gunned down on TV by this two-bit mobster,
mm-hmm.
it's just so inadequately explained. And, you know, you had the, as I have in my book, you had the memo that was written on the 25th, the day Oswald died, when his body wasn't even cold yet, from Nicholas Katzenbach, who was really acting attorney general because Bobby Kennedy was so devastated. And he wrote it to Bill Moyers, who had become an LBJ aide, and then later still a PBS newsman. But it delineates what their investigation was going to do. It said the public must be satisfied that Oswald was the sole assassin and he had no Confederates at large. And the whole premise of the memo is that this is what we're putting out. This is before any investigation. Oswald has just been shot by somebody. So the first logical thing would be, well, okay, if he was involved, that guy probably was involved too, but they shut it down from the beginning. And when you read that memo, no, that's the Attorney General, the Assistant Attorney General of the United States writing that. To me, that's just a slap in the face to anyone that thinks that there was any kind of investigation. And I believe that had a tremendous, like I said, a psychological impact on the public where, because, you know, I criticize the American people and call them the sheeple all the time. They're unthinking. They follow orders blindly. But they've always, the majority of them have always known or believed that there was a conspiracy in the Kennedy assassination. Every poll has shown that. As Richard Belzer said, you know, 90% of the people believe there was a conspiracy to kill Kennedy, and the other 10% work for the government and the media. And I think that's pretty much been the way it's always been. And so I think that was an important, and that really led to so many other conspiracies. And with that Kennedy assassination, we've never had the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, which was one of the biggest psyops ever. And, you know, obviously the escalation of the war in Vietnam, the 60s would have been completely different. I don't believe Robert Kennedy would have been assassinated, except for his brother was. And then later I have a whole big section on the John F. Kennedy Jr. plane crash, which I don't believe was an accident. And I believe all this is tied to, you know, that first Kennedy that was killed. And I believe the powers that be still fear a Kennedy because blood's thicker than water. And, you know, if you unravel that particular conspiracy, it is a huge one. I call it the mother of all conspiracies because it involved the President of the United States. Certainly, probably 9/11 had a bigger impact on all our lives. And I think that 9/11 would probably be considered the JFK assassination of that generation that was kids or teenagers when it happened. So, but these things are all related. The names may change, but the standard operating procedure is always the same. To cover up, to the media to not ask questions, to withhold information, to demonize anybody that questions it as a conspiracy theorist or a tinfoil hat or a wacko or extremist or, you know, which are really just new terms for commie or pinko, you know, that they use, you know.
Well, I just remember clearly a few days after 9/11, George Bush saying that he didn't want to hear any crazy conspiracy theories.
Right.
And right away I was like, well, then there must be a conspiracy. Or why would he even say that?
Exactly, sure. And that's when we got this, you know, perpetual war against terrorism. And He said, "You're either with us or you're with the terrorists." You know, that was exactly the way he said it. So how do you fight that? And, you know, Al-Qaeda becomes ISIS, becomes whatever else they're going to call it next. And it's the point where, you know, basically anybody with the name of Muhammad, they can trot out there and show his picture on TV. And most Americans are going to brand him guilty. And that's what happens when you have an enemy that can't be identified. And that's the problem that was in Vietnam. You know, the North and South, they were the same people. They weren't wearing different uniforms, so... That's what you can't fight a war like that. And if this were a war, I don't think it's any kind of legitimate war at all. But if it was, how do you fight people that aren't wearing uniforms? And it makes everyone suspect. And then not only are the Muhammads, you know, anybody with a Muslim name suspect. And if you try to say, hey, that's not right. If you try to, you know, defend them or, you know, criticize this effort at all, then you're considered a potential terrorist too. And that's, you know, that's very dangerous to any concept of liberty. And whatever left we have the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, people certainly ought to be criticizing things like the NDAA and this Trans-Pacific Partnership that's going to be apparently railroaded through. These are just terrible pieces of legislation that are just throwing gasoline on the fire.
Well, and, you know, as you said, that being called a conspiracy theorist is like this new way to demonize people. And not new, I mean, relatively new way to demonize people in the scheme of, you know, in the bigger scheme of things. But the other day on Facebook, that great Facebook, it so frustrates and annoys me most of the time. But we were talking about, you know, Obamacare, and someone called me a conspiracy theorist for not agreeing with Obamacare. How does that make me a what conspiracy am I, like, saying that, you know, that Obamacare is not good, so that makes me a conspiracy? I don't know. what was a conspiracy that I was trying to expose?
That's why, if you know, anyone that reads my book, if they can find a theory in there, other than that, I think the acknowledged reality that I'm trying to convey to people is that we have been ruled by, you know, almost unalterably corrupt and incompetent leadership at all levels, really, of society, but especially at the national level, since at least the time of the Kennedy assassination.
Well, and I don't like to call the leadership incompetent, because I think they're very competent for a certain segment of the society.
Well, that's why I say corrupt and incompetent.
Right, because, but super corrupt.
Yeah, you have the corruption and then... You do have a lot of... George W. Bush, I would say he was more incompetent than corrupt. I really don't think he knew what was going on at the time, you know. I mean, when someone's calling himself the great decider, you know, his quotes alone, I mean, I don't think he was the brains behind any operation.
Well,
but
no. Barely any president really is.
I mean, did Reagan really know what was going on? I mean, Reagan himself, but, you know, during his administration... Terrible things happened that you know, led to the destruction of our industrial base and the working class. But was Reagan Reagan was, you know, really just acting and playing a part. But, you know, he certainly, his administration was deadly, as most of them have been.
Right.
But that's, so to say conspiracy theorists, you're right. It's just another way. It's demonizing, because if you're questioning something about anything, and in the case of Obamacare, I mean, the people that are, it's amazing on Facebook. I run into that all the time, where just so many people are devoted to this guy, and the only criticism of him comes from the right, pretty much, and it's wrong-headed criticism, because he's killed more Muslims than all the other presidents put together. But it's the interest is hard enough, and that he's a Muslim himself. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Right. So that's one thing I'm gonna ask you.
Are you there?
Hello.
Yeah. Okay. There.
Yeah. So, I was reading the chapter on Obama, and I did notice that most of your criticism came from the right. And so that was just one question I have for you, is that the criticism, like especially from Andrew Breitbart, you believe that it was valid and warranted?
Well, that's what happens, is if you're... That's the only criticism really that's been out there of him. But,
well, you should have read my book, The Obama Files, Chronicles of an Award-Winning War Criminal. I would say I'm on the extreme left.
I'm probably on the extreme left too, but I overlap onto the right because I'm so far left. But
exactly, me too. Yeah, in some things.
Yeah, like, that's what happens. But in Breitbart's case, I mean, I don't read. I really didn't even know much about Andrew Breitbart.
He was super nasty to me. He's been very nasty to me.
Yeah, he was a typical guy, but I found fascinating the fact that he made this claim that he had something that was going to expose Obama, and then he dropped dead the next day. And those are the kind of things, that's a theme throughout my book, is that it tends to happen way too often. And, you know, and then I don't know if you, if in there I put that the video he had, it really was this bizarre speech that Obama, supposedly, they said, I can't believe that was the bombshell video, but where he's making a speech, and it was the oddest speech I've ever seen because the camera was almost never on Obama. It just kept panning the crowd, and I thought, I don't know who films a speech like that. So the whole thing was very odd, but, you know, and the same thing with the so-called birther thing, where the woman that, even Donald Trump, of all people, you know, tweeted about that when the woman was the only, that I think she was the one that validated his birth certificate or something in Hawaii. She died in a plane crash, not lying to, and she was the only person that died on the plane crash. So even that even aroused the skepticism of a Donald Trump. But there are lots of questions about his background. I mean, and the problem is they're coming. A lot of us don't like the sources they're coming from, the Breitbarts.
Right.
But they're the only ones bringing it up because the left is so devoted to him that other than people like you who are you know not in the mainstream media. That's, you know, that's really where you're getting most of these nuggets from. That was the same thing that happened during the Clinton administration. No one else was reporting about the deaths except for the far. I mean, Jerry Falwell, I believe, was the first guy that put out the Clinton Chronicles. You know, I'm not a fan of Jerry Falwell ever, but if that was the only way to get this information, in my book, I touched bases directly with a couple of those people that were involved with the so-called Clinton body count. They're real people. They really happened, and they weren't, you know, right-wing ideologues. They weren't political at all. They were just average people that their relatives were caught in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they died mysteriously, and apparently it was for some kind of political reasons, and that's what happens all too often, but people just tend to demonize that, and I go with all kinds of sources in there. I mean, sometimes the only way you can get the source is from a really far left-wing place, especially for a book like mine, or a really far right-wing thing, depending on who you're critiquing or what kind of story you're trying to research.
Oh, Don Jeffries, we're running out of time, but is there something that you'd like to add? And I'd also like you to tell us your website again.
Okay, well, it's my blog. It's keeping it unreal, and it's donjeffries.wordpress.com. You can find all the stuff I write about there. I need to write more. I'm beginning to write more about it. But, I just would urge anybody that's interested in any of these subjects, I'm probably impossible to categorize politically. I'm basically a populist. My hero is Huey Long. You know? that's my belief. I'm a strong redistributionist, but I'm also a strict Bill of Rights guy. I think the Constitution is great, and I'm a civil libertarian, so I don't like corruption at either end of the spectrum, and I think we've been living under corruption for a long, long time, but especially since 1963, and the incompetence comes in where, at least back then, and you know, when we were young in the 60s and 70s, at least, no matter how corrupt they were, there was a general air of competence about the corruption. The streets got plowed, the power didn't go off. Now, you know, you don't get that either. The median strips places don't. We're taking on the look of a third world nation in a lot of aspects, and the distribution of wealth is just unbelievable. I mean, everything's, if the statistics are correct, if they don't change by 2016, next year, they're claiming that the 1% will have more wealth than the 99% of the rest of us around the world. And that's just an intolerable situation.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to be a socialist to say that. I mean, you have to be a realist, and you can't have an economy with that kind of distribution of wealth.
Well, I love Huey Long, but my hero is Eugene V. Debs.
Oh, yeah, he was great. He was.
So anyway, Don Jeffries, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and keep up the good work, and it was nice to talk to you.
Nice talking to you. Thank you for having me, Cindy.
That's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for this week. As always, I hoped you were informed and inspired. And I hope you go to stopimperialism.com. And as always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, my production assistant, Dee Dee Miller. I'd like to thank Eric Draitzer for his work and for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. And I'd like to thank you for listening to and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.